How great is this? This could be the final play of the college season, perhaps, if Clemson gets a touchdown to win it. If Bama can hold them out, perhaps a field goal attempt for overtime. Watson, touchdown! 1 second remaining. Clemson Tigers, new kings of college football.
Oh, they shocked the world last night. Now, I know we're going to get a lot of folks out there that, oh, I wasn't shocked. I knew Clemson was going to win all the time. Everybody out there, even the Clemson fans, were a little bit nervous last night as Clemson took on Alabama and won the national championship in college football. I tell you what, it was they say this could be the greatest college football national championship ever. And Clemson won it against Alabama. I mean, it was to come along and beat Nick Saban and his Crimson Tide from Alabama. It was just an amazing game last night. All you Clemson fans this morning, congratulations. You can go ahead and be a little late for work today. We'll say that. You probably didn't get a whole lot of sleep last night. Good morning, everybody. How are you? It's a chilly Tuesday morning, the 10th day of January. It's 13 minutes past 6 o'clock on the Big Talker. And boy, we got a lot to talk about today. Of course, all day long, we're going to be talking about this incredible win by Clemson last night. Also today, it looks like Dylan Roof will, well, this thing is going to be going to the jury for deliberation to find out whether or not he is going to be sentenced to life in prison or get the death penalty. And we'll find out today. They're going to have closing arguments today. And I think everybody, pretty much the eyes of the world, are going to be what Dylan Roof has to say, if anything, in his defense, because this is his last chance to try to convince the jury in some way, shape, or form that he should not be put to death. So we'll find out what happens with that today. Coming up a little after 7 o'clock, we'll be talking with attorney Juan Tully about this case. So lots and lots to do today on a chilly Tuesday morning. Pat Benatar, 64 years old today. She was awesome. She still is awesome, I guess. George Foreman, 68 years old today. He was, you know, former heavyweight champion of the world, decided he wanted to start making grills. And I think he probably made more money off the grills than the boxing. I'm wondering how much, what the breakdown is on that. Donald Fagen is 69 years old today. He's from one of my favorite bands of all time, Steely Dan. Rod Stewart, 72 years old today. Ray Bolger was born on this day in 1904. He was the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz. Jim Croce was born on this day in 1943. We remember him from Bad Bad Leroy Brown and all of his fantastic hits. We've got 10 days left of hope and change as Obama will give his farewell speech tonight in Chicago. We've got 18 days until the year of the rooster. That's right, we get to do New Year's again. 26 days until Super Bowl 51. Valentine's Day will be here 35 days from now. 61 days until daylight savings time. It's on this day in 1949, RCA and Columbia introduced the 45 and 33 RPM vinyl records. Before that, they were all 78s, right? 1956, Elvis recorded Heartbreak Hotel. It was on this day in 1982. Anybody that was a Bewitched fan or watched the Hollywood Squares knew Paul Lynn. He was found mysteriously drowned in his swimming pool, either under the influence of alcohol or after suffering a heart attack. I don't know why we don't know the actual cause of death. He was only 55 years old today. Only 55 years old the day he died. 1994, Lorena Bobbitt went on trial in Manassas, Virginia. She was accused of cutting off her husband's doohickey with a kitchen knife. Oh, there you go. So then she took it for a little ride and threw it out the window. what a wife. 1999, The Sopranos premiered on HBO. It ran for 6 seasons, and it was on this day in 2010, China became the largest exporter in the world. Before that title went to the Germans. It's 16 minutes past 6 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com.
Charlie's taking your calls right now at 843-556-1250. You're listening to the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
This will go down as one of the greatest of all time. There's no doubt about it. But it was our night, and it was our time. And this has been a process in the making for us, but hats off to my team, and I'm just so happy for the Clemson Nation. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Clemson winning last night in the college national championships. Boy, oh boy, it was quite a game. If you're just waking up and you don't, and you haven't heard yet how it ended, this is how it went down last night.
How great is this? This could be the final play of the college season, perhaps, if Clemson gets a touchdown to win it. If Bama can hold him out, perhaps a field goal attempt for overtime. Watson, touchdown! 1 second remaining. Clemson Tigers, new kings of college football.
Unbelievable. I swear, I went to bed last night. It was 14. It was right around halftime last night. It was 14-7. And I was like, oh, boy. Yeah, I was very concerned. I was very concerned that Clemson would not be able to pull this game out. But woke up this morning, and I really expected to log on to Facebook and see, you know, hey, I still love my Tigers. Hey, boy, what a, you know, still big, you know, go Tiger Nation. We're still behind you and all of that. And then I expected all the Gamecock fans to be like, see, told you so. Told you. And instead woke up and Clemson is the new national champion. Steve's in Hanahan. Good morning, Steve. What'd you think about it? Did you watch the whole thing?
Oh, absolutely, Star.
Did you?
Guilty as charged.
Yes.
I did not think the Tigers would win.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
You know, the score was kind of like what I thought, close to what I thought it'd be like,
yeah.
Except reversed.
Right.
And I tell you this, you know, Dabo, I mean, obviously he's done a great job and a great coach, but he's got still got this rah-rah mentality. And when he, against Alabama's defense,
right
in the game, when he went for it, in the middle of the field on fourth down, I said, OMG. And, of course, they turned the ball over. That amounts to a turnover, and they scored.
Right.
7 points.
Yep.
I said, boy, if this comes back, if that score makes the difference in the game in Alabama's favor, I am going to be ticked big time. Of course,
right.
It didn't turn that way. And then, of course, they had a turnover by Gallman in the first part of the second half, which led to 3 points. So there you go. There was 10 points giveaway right there.
Sure.
I'm thinking, man, this is tough. But let me tell you, Deshaun Watson – and I tell you, Clemson's receivers just did a great job.
They really did.
Stock, the way he handled that last couple of minutes, and his stock had to go up for the
pro. Oh, absolutely.
That drive down the field.
And number one.
Was really pro-like.
Yeah, he goes, I mean, you're right, his stock really went up last night. I think he goes definitely high first round on this thing.
Well, he goes 400 yards against Alabama.
Alabama.
Secondary.
Number one defense in the nation. He puts up 400 yards.
He was, let's face it, in the first quarter, he was like, oh, man. I mean, he looked like he couldn't get going. It was like the bat was on his shoulder. He couldn't get the bat off his shoulder or something.
Funny you say that.
Stuck in the mud or something. And, man, I tell you what, when they finally got it going, it clicked real good. I'm real proud for him. I mean, you know, I'm not a big Clemson fan, but obviously I was pulling for him.
Yeah.
But I didn't see it coming out this way.
Funny you said that about Deshaun, because they did they zoomed the camera in on one play, and they showed his face, and I thought, oh man, this guy, he's not with it. He's scared.
Deer in the headlights.
That's a perfect way to put it, and that's exactly what I thought. And I guess he got it together in that second half. And boy, I tell you what a comeback to win that game last night. One second left, but granted, it was first down. I mean, they could have, if they had missed that, you know, that pass, they could have kicked the field goal and tied it up.
Now, Charlie, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
And as long as I've watched football, I don't know why I don't know the answer to this. At the end of the game, they scored 1 second left, 1 second on the clock. Why? I know when you kick, the clock doesn't run. You kick
right.
The extra point, right?
Yeah.
If you decide to go for two, does the clock go?
That's a good question. I don't know.
If it would have, all they had to do was just run out the clock, go for two. And I mean, I know there's somebody out there after all. I don't know why I don't know the answer to that question, but I don't. And I'm thinking, hey, just run it, and the clock's out. And don't forget about the extra point or even the two. Just take us 2 or 3 seconds, and the game's over.
Yeah, just do a 3-step drop and hit the knee.
But
right?
I'll tell you, I'll leave it at this. I don't like pro football.
I don't either.
Care for it. But if there's one thing I can appreciate about the pros is how those quarterbacks can go down the field in 2 minutes. It's amazing what they can do, and that's why I said Deshaun stopped. I mean, he just marched down there just like a pro quarterback. It was amazing.
Yeah, that 2-minute drill that really started coming about. What do you think is back in the 80s when everybody really started concentrating on that 2-minute drill?
Yeah.
Once you got the automatic timeout at the 2-minute point. It's amazing. All right, Steve, appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, man.
Thank you. Clemson, the national champions, will be talking more about this morning. Coming up next, guess what I got to listen to all weekend? Yep, I'm going to – let me play this for you. Oh, where did it go? Oh, here we go. Here's what I got to listen to all weekend. Yeah, and I'll tell you why I got to listen to that all weekend. Coming up next on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com.
It's the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James. Charlie James on WTMA.com and 1250 WTMA.
And I'm in the middle of posting this on Facebook. Hold on, let me get this up here. Because I want you to be able to see the video of what I'm about to play for you. It is fantastic. All right, here we go. You ready? This is it. That's it. You got any idea? You got any idea what that is? That is a horse. That is a horse playing with a rubber chicken. And the video is hilarious. I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, this thing, let me see how long this video is. Let's see, I'm just real quick. It's over a minute of the video of this horse named Cruza who just loves his squeaky toys. And he will seek this toy out and go and find this thing because he loves it so much. So that's what I got to listen to all weekend. I mean, it was basically my wife laughing and this noise. Yeah, that was it. I'm not sure what the neighbors thought about it, but there you go. They're like, oh, that Charlie guy, what's up with him? So it's gone viral. Just amazing. So if you want to see the video, go to my Facebook page. I'll also post that on Twitter. Either one. I mean, it'll be up on my Charlie James WTMA Facebook page, which you can always get in touch with me there. And also, you can get in touch with me at charlie@wtma.com. How about that? If you want to send me an email, I'm on Twitter, Charlie on Air, and real easy to find. Real easy to find. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. We got the closing statements from the Dylann Roof trial, the penalty phase, coming up today. It's going to be starting around 9:30 this morning. And we're going to find out what Dylann Roof has to say for himself. Now, so far in this trial, he hasn't given any defense, really. He's made a couple of objections to some of the things, some of the witnesses in the testimony in the trial. But it seems to me that his real concern is what is going to be released as far as his mental competency is concerned. So we will find out what he has to say today. I'm certainly hoping that he's not going to take the opportunity today, like we feared in his opening statements, to make some type of statement, some type of defense of his twisted ideology. So we will find out today. Here are your headlines in 60 seconds.
College football's national title.
French authorities have arrested 17 people in connection with a robbery of more than $10 million worth of jewelry from the Paris apartment of Kim Kardashian West last October.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is pledging that all of Donald Trump's nominees will be properly vetted.
Ivanka Trump's husband, Jared Kushner, will take on an official advisory role in the West Wing. The 35-year-old became one of the president-elect's closest confidants in the heat of the campaign. Trump has mentioned him as a possible mediator. mediator in Middle East peace talks.
Dairy Queen closed the restaurant in Zion, Illinois, north of Chicago, after, say, police, he used racial slurs in an angry confrontation with a customer.
Dylan Roof continues to represent himself at the penalty phase of his federal death penalty trial.
A string of bomb threats against Jewish community centers in at least 7 states.
The NASDAQ closed at a record high.
U.S. forces in Syria stage a rare ground raid.
In Orlando, a city police officer was shot and killed near a Walmart.
Alibaba. Have you heard about Alibaba? You know what Alibaba is? It's like a big, giant, imagine Amazon times 100, because they're mainly in China, and they're, I guess I'll call them like an online warehouse. You can order all kinds of stuff. Well, they are looking at coming to the United States, and we've seen, you just heard that the NASDAQ was up to an all-time record high. So, Fiat announced that they were going to expand here in the United States. Ford is taking that, not going to be moving that plant down to Mexico. They're going to put $700 million in a factory here. Of course, we know about Carrier and all of these other companies who are now saying, hey, you know what? The United States might actually be a fantastic place to do business. And I'm really kind of, it makes me scratch my head how anybody can come up and say, oh, this is going to be a bad deal. But, of course, the folks on the left are all in a tizzy about it. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about this morning, because this Alibaba thing, they're talking about, I saw somewhere where they were talking about 1 million jobs. I don't know how one company could do that, but that was one of the things that that they were talking about. I'll give you the exact figures coming up. And is Meryl Streep overrated? Of course, when Meryl Streep took to the Golden Globes, which, by the way, they didn't do very well. And they did about 20 million in the ratings, but still is about half of what folks were actually watching on football. And then Meryl Streep took the time out to slam the people to watch football and MMA. Well, anyway, Donald Trump took to Twitter and called Meryl Streep an overrated actress. But is she indeed overrated? The Associated Press did a quote-unquote fact check. This is what they do now. The Associated Press, they fact check Donald Trump's tweets, and they decide whether or not Meryl Streep is overrated. We'll give you some hard numbers about Meryl Streep and whether or not she is really an overrated actor coming up in just a few minutes, right around 7:20 this morning. We'll also be talking with attorney Juan Tully right around the corner on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. It's time to go to the phones and talk with Juan Tully. She's an attorney and been covering the Dylan Roof trial. Good morning, Juan. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. All right, we've got closing arguments coming up today in the Dylan Roof trial. What are we looking at this morning?
We're looking at starting at 9:30 this morning. We should have closing arguments, jury charges, and jury deliberations. Before we do closing arguments, the judge will address some of the issues that they raised yesterday trying to decide how they were going to charge the jury. One of the issues that came up was whether or not to tell the jury that they didn't have to have a unanimous decision, and that's something that the judge will decide on today. If they don't have a unanimous decision for the death penalty or for life in prison,
right, that
goes back to the judge, and the judge can give the lesser of the two penalties as a sentence. So it wouldn't be a mistrial like in
right. The
Michael Slager case.
Because he has already been found guilty.
Exactly.
And now they're just deciding on the punishment for him, which could, as you said, could be the death penalty or life in prison. What are we expecting from Dylan Roof today? Are we expecting any sort of defense, any sort of explanation? Are people kind of a little concerned that he might use this as a platform to get part of his message out?
People have raised that as an issue throughout the process, and so far he hasn't done that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be surprised if he picked today to try and get his message out. He had an opportunity to do that with opening statements. And he didn't. He was respectful of the process. He was respectful of the witnesses, of the jury, of the judge throughout the process. So I would think that he would not choose to do that at this point.
It seems like one of the big concerns for Dylann Roof is that the mental competency, the transcripts aren't released.
That's correct. He seemed more concerned about that than anything else. So, you know, I don't know what's in those in the documents, mm-hmm. but he definitely seemed concerned about having that released. Now, whether that's a part of what his attorneys might say is his issues or his possible mental illness, whether that's a sign of the fact that, you know, he just wants to cover up whatever his mental illness is and he's
right.
not concerned about that, then being found not guilty is an issue, I suppose.
I can't imagine the reasoning behind what he is doing, but yesterday it seemed like they handed a motion to the judge, mm-hmm. and the judge rejected the motion because it wasn't signed by Dylann Roof or it wasn't done properly. What was that about?
It seems that his defense attorneys filed a motion without Dylann Roof knowing about it. They wanted to try and get some witnesses on the stand that didn't relate to mental illness, since Dylann Roof had objected to that and he had chosen not to present witnesses. And so they tried to do it in a backdoor kind of way of
right.
getting it done, and the judge refused to do it. The judge said that Dylann Roof has chosen to act as his counsel, and he didn't want it done, and Dylann Roof agreed with the judge.
It just seems like he's not doing anything in the world to try to save his life.
It doesn't seem that way. So, you know, I don't know where that comes from, whether that's part of his plan or whether it's just part of possibly his psychosis, or whether he is maybe remorseful. Who knows? Who knows?
I thought in one of his jailhouse journal, he wrote that he was giving his life for this cause of his. Are we talking about the actual giving of his life, giving up his life?
I guess some might see it as him trying to be a martyr for
right.
his cause, and I suppose that's a possibility. He went through the trouble of saying in his journal that it was his idea, his responsibility, didn't want anyone else to be blamed. He seemed concerned about not disparaging his family or anyone else in the process, that it was solely his idea, and that, yes, he was. He hated that he had to give his life for this.
Right. So I guess the eyes of the world are going to be on his closing statements today. And, of course, we'll be waiting for a sentence. Could come this afternoon?
Could come this afternoon or possibly tomorrow. There's some people, even though everybody who is on the panel has indicated that they could give either a death sentence or a life without parole sentence in their voir dire, in the questioning of the jury at the mm-hmm. beginning. You know, some people may have some trouble coming to that final decision, so they may weigh the factors more or take more time than they did with coming to the guilty verdict. However, they don't have much to go on except
right.
what the prosecution has said, because Dylann Roof has given them nothing. So we'll have to see how that goes.
All right. It all starts at 9:30 this morning. Juan, we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Attorney Juan Talion with us covering the Dylann Roof trial. It's 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA. Good morning. It's 7:24 at the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Meryl Streep took to the stage at the Golden Globes the other night to basically slam Donald Trump. Donald Trump responded by saying that she was overrated. Now, the Associated Press has done a quote-unquote fact check and found out that Meryl Streep was not overrated. She won this award and that award and the blah, blah, blah award and the National Association of the Yada, Yada, Yada award. But where does it really count? The box office. The box office, as far as celebrities are concerned. I am looking at a list of the top 100 actors and their box office totals. Meryl Streep is not in any She is not in the top 100. Not in the top 100. In fact, she's way, way down on the list. This is going to surprise you. John, who do you think is the number one box office earning celebrity in the world?
Clint Eastwood.
You would think something like that, right?
Or Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Really?
Samuel L. Jackson. Total box office sales for Samuel L. Jackson movie, $508,049,311.
Wow.
Yeah, that's he averages about $62 million per movie. That's box office sales, not salary. So Meryl Streep overrated? Possibly. 26 minutes after 7 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com.
Charlie James and the TMA Morning Show.
My, everybody's so sensitive. Can't we all just get along?
On 1250 WTMA.
All right, we've got a busy half hour. Let's get right to it. On the phones with us right now is Dr. Tevi Troy. He's a former Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services for George W. Bush and is the author of Shall We Wake the President? Two Centuries of Disaster Management from the Oval Office. Good morning. How are you, Dr. Troy?
Hey, thanks for having me on, Charlie. Really appreciate it.
Glad to have you. You have written an article for the Wall Street Journal, and it outlines exactly what a presidential vacation is. It's really, when you take a vacation as president, you're not really off the clock, are you?
No, you're really never off the clock as president, and it's part of the job. Obviously, it's a great job, and we're going to see inauguration here soon in Washington. Mm-hmm. But you really got to be on top of things. And this is part of a larger book that I worked on presidents and disasters called Shall We Wake the President? And it just reminds people that one of the key things presidents have to deal with is external crises, and they always have to be ready.
Right. Now, of course, we all know, you know, the 3 a.m. call, who's going to wait, you know, who's going to answer that. What are some of the major, the major disasters, I mean, other than 9/11, that the president really has had to deal with at 3 o'clock in the morning,
so to speak. Right. In my book, I talk about Katrina. I talk about 9/11 in the Bush presidency. But I go back in time and look at the 1927 Mississippi floods or the Hurricane Camille in 1969 when Richard Nixon sent his vice president, Spiro Agnew, down to the Gulf to check things out. And Agnew came back and said that people don't know how severe a hurricane is going to be. And so that led to them coming up with this idea of a categorization for hurricanes, and that's how we have Category 1 through 5 storms today.
Is that right? I had no idea. That came from the Nixon administration. But what about public perception of presidential vacations? I mean, the president has to be pretty careful about how much time he spends outside of the White House, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And Ronald Reagan was president for 8 years. If you add up all the time he spent in California at his ranch, it added up to about 360 days. So they said he spent 1 year out of 8 years on vacation. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not true that he was vacationing that whole time because, as you know, there's modern communications and the president was in touch at all times. But still, this stuff does, when it accrues to large numbers like that, the president's critics can use it against him.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, a lot of people talking about Barack Obama and the amount of vacation time that he's taken. In a list of the presidents, how does Obama rank in time off, so to speak, on vacation? Does he rank up there in the top?
I mean, he ranks up there in the top in that he's a modern president who served for 8 years, and he took vacations in Hawaii every winter, and he took vacations on Martha's Vineyard every summer. So if you add up all the times, it's a lot of days. But again, he was taking briefings on those times. So I don't fault presidents for vacations per se, and I'm very clear about that in the article.
Right.
What I do fault them for is if something bad happens on their vacation and they don't jump on it and take charge right away. That's the problem.
And, of course, you know, we talked about public perception. That always doesn't look bad for a president when something happens and they're on vacation. But we've got a lot of fail-safes now, don't we? We've got the auto pin and things like that.
Yeah, and this dates back, and I talk about this in the article, to Theodore Roosevelt, when he was president in the very beginning of the 20th century, he brought phone lines to his vacation home at Sagamore Hill on Long Island, and he brought more aides with him than presidents had previously taken. So he had this idea created of the working vacation where he was constantly in touch with the White House, even though he was away.
Right. So always in communication. Well, it's a fascinating article, and the book is called Shall We Wake the President? Two Centuries of Disaster Management from the Oval Office. Dr. Tevi Troy, we appreciate you being on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon. All right, coming up in just a minute, we're going to be talking with Michelle Watson from Charleston County Schools right here on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com.
Sometimes you just gotta vent. We feel your pain and encourage you to share it. Lines are open right now at 843-556-1250. More of Charleston's local talk with Charlie James is coming up as the TMA Morning Show continues next.
Tuesday means we talk with the folks with the Charleston County School District. With us this morning, we've got Michelle English Watson, Executive Director of Student Support Services. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you this morning, Charlie?
Doing fantastic. Now, that sounds pretty important, Student Support Services. What does your office do exactly?
It is. It's several departments and offices that collaborate to meet the physical, academic, social, and emotional needs of all students in Charleston County Schools.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still a mouthful, so I'm going
sure.
to break it down some more and say, well, it's Title I, it's guidance, it's nursing, it's expanded learning, it's McKinney-Vento, which deal with homeless students. It's several departments.
Now, you just mentioned homeless students. What does the school district do with homeless students or for homeless students when it's been very cold the past couple of days?
That is
special
true.
Procedures in place for that?
Yes, definitely. So under the McKinney-Vento Act, which are federal dollars, when families find themselves displaced or homeless due to financial crisis or it could be a fire in their home,
mm-hmm.
you know, so they're displaced, we have funds to help the students get supplies and materials and clothing and sometimes even backpacks of food to help them, bridge that connection between a stable environment or to help that, environment to be more stable for
mm-hmm.
them.
Sure.
So, yes, and we are able to provide that services for our students.
Of course, not only during the cold weather, but also August, September here in Charleston, it also gets very hot. Pretty much the same thing for them during that time?
Yes, definitely. It is year long.
All right. Well, you said year long,
mm-hmm.
but what about during extended breaks? Or
yes.
Is this when only school is in session? Or
no, it is even when school is out of session because, fire happens all the time,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Now, you guys, you just said that you were heavily involved with Title I schools. That means a higher level of poverty.
Yes.
And one of the major keys to student success is parental involvement.
That is so correct.
At home. Do we find that lower income families are not as involved? And what do you guys do to address that problem?
So, in Title I funds, in what we call Title I schools, meaning high poverty schools, they get dollars to support initiatives such as academic and parent involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And we do training with parents and how they can help their children at home to help them academically to be more successful, how to meet their children's needs beyond the classroom as well. So we provide that training through, our federal Title I dollars in the schools, help parents learn how to be more partners
right.
In the school and at home as well.
Well, we always say that the best education starts at home. But oftentimes we see this cycle of poverty that happens through generations. And I guess part of the teaching would be showing these parents how they can actually break that cycle of poverty by getting their child a good education.
That is very correct. Yes. That's what research shows, and that is what we're trying to do as well.
And you also offer a lot of after-school programs, Kaleidoscope. What
yes.
happens at Kaleidoscope?
Well, Kaleidoscope is a parent, it's a pay-for-fee program, after-school
mm-hmm.
program. We have them in our elementary schools across the district. And within the program, not only does it help the students with their homework, we have counselors in the program helping students with homework, but we also provide enrichment-type activities such as chess, learning how to play chess, how to be STEM activities, engineering,
right.
Robotics. So it's it's very interesting and engaging for our children. And we're also hoping to boost the program up also with some additional academics.
Right. So it's kind of hands-on, very tactile.
Yes.
Type of things with the after-school programs. How many students would you imagine that your office deals with every year?
Oh, we are, I don't want to be quoted incorrectly, but
right.
I want to say I think we're more than 3,000 students.
Wow. That's a considerable amount.
And
every time I talk with you guys with the Charleston County School District, it just amazes me with the sheer volume of children that you help on a daily basis. I mean, and like I said, you guys, you know, your days are full, right?
Yes.
So how can parents, I mean, just the average parent out there listening, how can they help their child improve their education?
So, of course, being engaged in their children's, at their children's school, mm-hmm. definitely. Talking with the teacher on a daily, not necessarily a daily, but on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how's my child doing in the class? Where, what are his weaknesses? What are his strengths? What can I do at home to help? Just asking those questions, basically. And then following up at home, talking to your child. Well, do you have any homework tonight?
Right.
What areas what do you enjoy about school? What do you not like about school? You're just having that conversation and tuning into your child's feelings about school as well. So that keeps that communication open, and it gives you an idea, you know, what's going on in his classroom.
Right, exactly. It's that parental involvement, and we know that you guys are very involved in that. All right, Michelle English Watson, we appreciate you being on the program this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, the Charleston County School District, it's 7:59 at the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250, area code 843, of course. Let's see what we got going on this morning. Coming up, the manhunt is still on for that person who shot that police officer down in Florida. We'll give you some details on that. In fact, I think they're offering a $60,000 reward for information leading to this person's arrest. We'll give you those details coming up in just a second. Right now, let's go to Somerville and talk to Malcolm. Malcolm Obama giving, President Obama giving his final speech tonight, his farewell address, if you will.
Yes, with heavy hearts, we have to go through that. But, what is 4.7 unemployment rate?
Yeah.
156 million new jobs for December.
Mm.
75 straight months of job growth.
Mm.
We added about 2 million jobs all over. I mean, this guy, he doesn't say much, but that's his record.
And, he doesn't say much.
He's very proud of it. He can be very proud
so,
of it.
So we have a lot of part-time jobs. We've still got 97 million Americans not in the workforce. That is, you know, that's a lot more than 4%.
Well, we'll see how your guy does.
Oh, you know what? And Malcolm, I'll tell you what. I don't doubt that once Donald Trump is in office, we'll give him until February before the new jobs figures come out. I don't doubt for one moment that we're going to start seeing the actual unemployment figures in the United States for the first time in 8 years.
You don't believe these
no.
are unemployment figures?
No.
Oh, come on.
Not at all.
Yes.
Not at all.
And,
how can you have 97 million people out of the workforce and only have 4% unemployment?
Well, I give them to you. Those are the numbers. And I hope that this racist Dylan Roof, I hope he gets the death penalty for what he richly deserves.
Now we'll agree on that one, Malcolm. I agree too.
Right.
I hope we don't have to go through another day of it.
Those are the real numbers that come right out of the labor board and whatever. Those are the real numbers.
Yeah, the Obama appointed labor commission. That's right. That's exactly where they're coming from. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. That's a great analogy about numbers and how you can look at them. Back during World War II, there was a guy named Abraham Weld. And Abraham Weld was part of a think tank. It was World War II, and the United States military had had an issue with planes. And they were wondering where to put the armament on the planes was. So what they would do when the planes would come back from combat, they would count all the bullet holes in the planes to see where they needed to armor the planes. And of course, they had a problem. If you don't armor the planes well enough, the planes are quick and mobile. If you armor the planes too much, they're slow and they use a lot of fuel. However, they're more protected. So they did a survey of all the planes that came back, and we're talking about numbers here and how they can be misleading. And they noticed that the planes, when they came back from combat, let's say, and I'll just throw some numbers out here, the fuselage would have like 1.11 bullets per square foot, we'll say. And then the wings would have like 1.08 bullets per square foot. And then the engines would have 1.1 bullets per square foot. So if you look at those numbers, if you look at those numbers alone, it would tell you that where you need to armor those planes is in the fuselage, right? They're getting the vast majority of the bullets. Well, this guy named Abraham Weld, he was a brilliant statistician. And he kind of stepped forward and he said, wait a minute, we're missing something here. And they're like, what are you talking about, Abraham? We got the greatest statisticians in the world, and they're telling us that we need to armor the fuselage. That's where the planes are getting most of the bullets. And he said, yeah, but what about the planes that don't come back? Where are those bullets? And he theorized that the bullets were in the missing planes, and those bullets were in the engine compartment of those planes. And they took his advice. They started up armoring the engine compartment of these planes, and more of them started coming back from combat. So see, numbers alone don't tell you everything. Sometimes you got to look for the missing bullets. It's 17 minutes until 9 o'clock. Let's go to Sheila out in Hanahan. Good morning, Sheila. How are you?
I'm fine, Charlie. I'm calling in response to the question or the issue of the percentage that unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
Let me suggest that I go into a town and there are 120 people in that town, and 25 of them are unemployed.
Right.
That gives a 20% unemployment rate,
mm-hmm.
21%, but
right.
20% rounded. And so I suggest if you elect me, I will reduce your unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
So you elect me, and I say, okay, those people who've been unemployed for so long, we're not going to count you anymore. Those people who are underemployed, we're not going to count you anymore.
Right.
And so after I'm elected, there are 20 people who drop out and say, okay, I'm underemployed, I've been unemployed too long. So now there are only 5 people who are still counted as being unemployed. We still have a town with 125 people,
mm-hmm.
120 people. We have 25 who are not working, but only 5 are considered to be unemployed. The unemployment rate has dropped to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a wonderful job.
You are a great politician.
And I have done exactly what I promised. I have reduced dramatically the unemployment rate.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Without actually providing more jobs.
No. I have the same 25 people who are not working, but only 5 of the 25 are considered unemployed now.
That's right.
And that's what we've done.
That's
we've done. From the labor force that we can reduce that percentage exactly like that.
It's a big numbers game, and that's all they're reporting right now is the amount of people who are on unemployment. But once you take a part-time job, guess what? You don't get unemployment anymore. Sheila, that's a fantastic statement you made there for us. Thanks for calling in. 843-556-1250 is the number to be on the program. It's 14 minutes until 9 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. 843-556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. Like Keith in Hanahan. Good morning, Keith. How are you?
Good morning, Charlie.
Yes, sir.
I used to live in Mount Pleasant, but I moved to Hanahan,
mm-hmm.
Thankfully. But now I got to drive that racetrack out there, I-526. Well, let me tell you what happens out there on a daily basis. you know, you got these derelict port truck drivers that have no regard for the law or how they drive or what they're carrying and what kind of vehicle they're driving.
Mm-hmm.
And you got, you know, everybody in their SUVs, you know, trying to text and do all kind of business out there. And they're all exceeding the speed limit because I try to drive between 60, 65. But, you know, they're blowing by you at 80, 90,
oh, yeah,
times 100 miles an hour. And there's zero traffic enforcement out there. Zero. I never see a cop out there. You know, I used to avoid that road at all costs because,
Ryan,
you know, and you can frankly lay the blame on, you know, a young girl that lost her life out there during the holidays.
Yeah.
You can probably put the say there's blood on the hands of these local traffic enforcement agencies around here because there's never anybody out there doing anything about the reckless driving, the speeding that goes on out there. Just ridiculous, you know.
I agree.
I'm fed up with it.
I feel you.
You know, they could solve every problem on 526 every afternoon if they just closed that third truck lane so people couldn't roll down it at 100 miles an hour trying to pass everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then whip it back over in the other lane to get in front so they can say they're in front of the traffic.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just like we're always near the top in bad drivers here in South Carolina. Keith, I appreciate you calling in, and I feel your pain, buddy. I'm glad that I don't have to drive those some of those thoroughfares during, and I avoid them. You know, my schedule is such, unless there's something special going on, I'm not out in that traffic. I mean, I see it and I hear about it, but I do everything I can to avoid it. Did go over to West Ashley a couple of weeks ago. It was around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was going to the shooting range over there. And boy, I tell you what, how the folks in West Ashley are dealing with that. I mean, you look at 61, 41 over in Mount Pleasant, just 17 over in Mount Pleasant. The traffic here is just, it's unbelievable. And we have grown at a rate that far exceeds the capability or the capacity, it seems like, of our roads right now. And it's just, I mean, it was almost as soon as that, you know, that flyover there at 17. It's like the day that was finished and I drove across it, I was like, oh, well, this thing's already obsolete. You widened 17 a couple of years ago. Well, that's already obsolete. And then you're going to put another community out there with 5,000 homes in it. And it's just, man, I tell you what, it's a mess. I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, look at Ben Sawyer. The bridge is closed now. Swing bridge over there, it looks like it's stuck. And not sure when that's going to be fixed. But now they're talking about putting the Atlantic, which is an apartment complex with about 400 units out there. And that's, I don't understand how people are going to do it. I really don't. I mean, that's just that little road going onto the island there. And I really don't understand how that makes any sense at all. Patrick is out in Hollywood. Patrick, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's up, bud?
Well, you know, the traffic issue, the people issue, the politicians have ruined this place.
Mm.
You know, it's just, what do you expect? They're hell-bent and determined to make it a major city, you know?
Why would our local politicians want this to be like Charlotte? Why would they want it to be like Atlanta?
I have no earthly idea.
Is it money?
But if it was up to me, I'd recall every last damn one of them.
There you go. All right. Appreciate it, Patrick. Thank you very much. It's time to go to Ferris out on Folly Beach and see what's going on. Ferris, what's up with you?
Same thing on this morning. Three radio stations and two TV stations. So the story of the day, and Alex Jones did a good piece hitting at this yesterday, even on vacation.
Mm.
He comes into his show and when he comments.
All right, let's get to the point.
Notable thing. Here's the point. Are you following the Duncan Hunter story?
Yeah, he painted over that cops kill was a mural.
No. What it is, Charlie, is a painting.
Well, that is a mural, Ferris. A mural is a painting.
That's what a mural is to me.
Ferris.
Mural to me is something that's painted on a wall. This is a painting.
Okay.
And the difference, the distinction, it's not a big deal, Charles.
No, well, then let's get beyond it. What's the point?
But the point is that because it's a painting, it's removable by a real man.
Mm-hmm.
A real man, Duncan Hunter, Marine, United States Marine Corps. This is important. This is how they analyze it. Real men are making things happen now. And that's why the ladies who control the left side are really nervous. Because what you've had is a couple real men have stepped up and done something. The ultimate alpha male, Donald Trump, has been found his way into office with the help of another real man, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford, who was a college brother of mine.
Okay.
And now comes, see, what this is, I'm going to
But let me ask you something, Ferris. Did Duncan Hunter have the permission to take that painting down?
He certainly did by his oath as a United States Marine. I don't know if you ever wore the uniform of your country. But what we're seeing here, and it's...
Okay, does the oath of the United States Marine, does that trump, so to speak, law?
You betcha it does. And
no,
the,
it doesn't.
The overriding point, that's an argument you're going to have all day long.
Is he a Marine? Does he wear the uniform right now?
I didn't call up to be interrogated. I called up to make a
point.
Well,
then you got to go away. Sorry. I mean, if you're going to call and interrogate me, Ferris, then you got to be able to take it as well as you can give it. So, sorry. Duncan Hunter removed it. Now, granted, I hate the painting. I cannot stand the painting. If you guys don't know what to talk about, it's a painting. It's got some cops portrayed as pigs. Racism kills. It's a painting of a riot. It's a painting of a riot. And all kinds of symbolism in it and everything like that. And Duncan Hunter goes in and he removes the painting from the U.S. Capitol wall on Friday. That's according to the Washington Post. So did he have the right to take the picture down? Now, if you're a good, true conservative, I like to believe that you're a person that likes to abide by the rule of law and understand that there are certain processes to go through to, you know, to take care of things like this. But Duncan Hunter removed it himself. Okay? He basically took the law into his own hands and removed this painting. Took the law into his own hands. That, it to me, is lawlessness. Now, as much as I agree with Duncan Hunter's opposition to this painting, and as offensive as I find this painting, you're talking about abiding by the rule of law, and I don't feel like that is what Duncan Hunter did. As well-intentioned as his actions were, they don't, I think, they weren't legal.
Charlie James in the morning. Stimulating talk all day. WTMA.
Cumulus Station.
50 WTMA, WTMA.com. Thanks for joining us on the program this morning. This is your hour when you get to make your voice heard here in the Lowcountry. And if you would like to do that, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That is 556-1250. They're going to start confirmation hearings today on some of Donald Trump's nominees, and one of those is Jeff Sessions. Now, there is a group of black pastors who got together yesterday, and they criticized African-American opponents of Attorney General nominee Senator Jeff Sessions for demonizing the Alabama Republican instead of portraying him as someone who shows respect and care for people of all races. Now, the ministers are, of course, Jeff Sessions supporters, in a much larger group of opponents among Southern black clergy and the African-American and civil rights group, including the North Carolina Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the Alabama NAACP, and the activist group PICO, which uses congregations and churches to help in community organizing. And you can read that as helping in the political process, which I didn't think they were supposed to do. But hey, you know what? You can't say anything about that. So Evangelical Bishop Harry Jackson said in this press conference at a news conference up there on Capitol Hill that there is an attempt by some to demonize people and call them racist when there's actually no proof of it. Let me say clearly, Senator Sessions is not a racist. Jackson, who is the pastor of Hope Christian Church in Beltsville, Maryland, said Session worked to bankrupt the KKK in Alabama with a $7 million judgment, also helped to desegregate the state's public school system. But there are a lot of other people. Now, where does all of this come from, that Jeff Sessions is a racist? Well, it comes from one guy named Thomas Figures. Now, Thomas Figures accused Jeff Sessions of being a racist back when he was up for another cabinet position several years ago, called him a racist, and that pretty much took Jeff Sessions off the cabinet. Now, we find out that this same guy, Thomas Figures, also had a few other problems other than Jeff Sessions. He also said that that Dan Rather was trying to communicate with him through the television. That's right. He was trying to communicate through the television, Dan Rather. But they meant more than just on the air. He meant like telepathically. And if you want anybody communicating with you telepathically, would it be Dan Rather? I don't think so. All right, let's go to Wayne out in Onondaga. Good morning, Wayne. How are you?
Hey, great, Charlie. Tuned you in. Duncan Hunter, from removing the that ridiculous artwork.
Right. Yeah.
Did you go into his Duncan Hunter's recent past spending campaign?
No. No, we just talked about the painting.
Yeah. Okay. I applaud what he did 100%. Okay. But please, just Google the guy. He is under a lot of pressure. They just busted him for like $65,000 worth of campaign misappropriation.
Right.
And stuff Ken R. did.
Yeah.
And they caught him because he actually flew a rabbit, a pet rabbit, bought an airline ticket for a pet rabbit. I guess for his kid or something.
Oh, God.
$50. Has his campaign account.
That's brilliant. How do you justify that as a campaign expense?
I bought computers.
Yeah.
Had dental work done, et cetera, et cetera. It's all Google it. That's what gets me about this story, is he had the pressure was on him. He threw his wife under the bus in this situation. He said, well, you know, I messed up from spending because the credit card for the campaign fund versus my regular fund was the same color. And, I just was a mistake.
Right, yeah. No. If you're a congressman, you got to have a little more accountability than that.
Well, I just want to put it in perspective.
I
applaud what he did, and but it just makes me sick. I mean, I think it's hypocritical. I just like your audience to know maybe his motivation for that. Although it's the right thing he did.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't agree because he really went outside the law. Now, we just had a caller saying that he was within the law to do that, but we'll find out later on today. You also wanted to talk about Lindsey Graham. What's up with Lindsey?
Yeah, I don't know the people. I call his office probably twice, three times a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm nice. I leave a message. Basically just call him out. I mean, is it just me? I mean, the guy's a Democrat. I mean,
oh yeah,
sitting there, he is. Okay, first of all, we know how he did in his campaign. Awful. And he said he was proud to say he was not going to vote for Donald Trump. Made a big deal about it.
Right.
And he is trying to sabotage the presidency of Donald Trump, like the Democrats are. How does this man, why don't we reprimand him as residents of this state and the power brokers that support him? Why don't we put pressure on Lindsey's people?
Well, we can put pressure on them, and we can do it at the ballot box. But yeah, he just, for some reason, keeps I've met very few people that are big pro Lindsey Graham supporters, but yet he still gets reelected. And I don't know if that's because he's got a huge war chest for his campaign or what.
Well, I think that's got a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
You see where the money comes from. It's mostly military contractors.
Now, you got to admit, I mean, he is very pro-military, and you got to give him that. Wayne, I appreciate you giving us a call this morning. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. Just had somebody post on my Facebook page, what is the economic impact for Clemson University and for the state of South Carolina with them winning the national championship? That is a great question. I know that Tampa had a huge economic impact because the game was played down there, but I'm not sure how much that's going to translate into actual dollars for the state. I know now it is going to be, when you win a national championship, recruiting that next year is very easy. I mean, that all of a sudden becomes something that's a little easier than it was the year before when you didn't have that trophy. So now you're a national championship team and you can start recruiting. And then Dabo does a great job in recruiting anyway. But as far as actual dollars coming into the state, we'll see. I mean, I'm not sure how much of an economic impact it's going to make. Is that going to mean more people will travel to see Clemson play next year? Will that get more money to the I just don't know. I just don't know how much of an impact that's going to have for us here.
I would say the price of tickets to go see Clemson at Death Valley is going to go up.
Just went up a little bit?
Yep.
Yeah, I wonder how much those I tell you what, parking spaces. And the thing about Clemson, like if you go to Columbia and you go to see the Gamecocks playing, you got to, block or park a ways away.
Yeah.
And you've got that walk. That's a fairly easy walk. I mean, downtown, I understand it's Assembly Street and all that stuff's a little hilly, but it's nothing like Clemson. I mean, you are hoofing it in Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Athens up in Georgia. They're up in the foothills, and it's not that easy a trek. I'll be honest with you, I've only been to one Clemson game. Loved the stadium, loved the town. It's absolutely gorgeous. So, but again, not sure how much of an economic impact that's going to have with them winning the national championship. If that were the case, then, Alabama ought to be rolling in money. Right? I mean, they absolutely ought to be swimming in money, but still, all right. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. Let's go real quick to Ricky out on James Island. Good morning, Ricky. How are you?
Good. How are you
doing? Yes, sir. Doing good. What's up?
Hey, I'm listening about Lindsey Graham. I sent him a message yesterday telling him that basically, I've supported him all these years,
mm-hmm.
but it's time for me to stop because he's a liberal, and he's focused on things that I don't agree with.
Right.
So I recommend he joins the Democratic Party.
Well, all right.
Him and John McCain, both of them.
What do you not agree with what Lindsey Graham is doing?
Well, him not supporting Trump.
Right.
That's my biggest problem. He is going to be the president mm-hmm. of the United States, whether he likes it or not. And if he don't get on the Trump train, then he needs to be voted out, or changed to a Democratic Party. Maybe he'll get elected that way.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
He'd make a great Democrat. John McCain, too, would make a great Democrat.
And it'd probably be easier for them to get reelected. Ricky, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Could you imagine having a Democrat senator here in South Carolina? We got Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott. We certainly don't want a Democrat in there. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. 1250, if you'd like to give us a call. Coming up in just a few minutes, we are about 30 seconds away from, hypothetically, the penalty phase for Dylann Roof trial. The closing arguments are going to be made today. We'll keep you updated on that as it comes along. But we've got less than 10 days now until Donald Trump is president. We'll talk about that coming up on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Good morning. 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com on your Tuesday morning. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program today. Now, I tell you what, if you've been watching Facebook, you know that people are getting ugly and nasty out there. So I wanted to bring in somebody today to see if this is generational or if it is across the board. Please welcome to the program from our sister station, 95SX. We've got the one and only Sparkle. Good morning, Sparkle. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. I'm great.
You are, where are you in the millennial scale?
I Googled this.
All right.
I am on the cusp. Like, it was like basically being born, I think the cutoff was like 89. You had to be born between, I think, like a certain all the way up to 89.
Right.
I was 87. So we're
so
good.
So you're in there. You're
I'm a millennial.
Millennial,
but I'm like on the cusp. I would say my little brother, who's 22, is the prime millennial.
Okay.
He's the prime right now.
So what are you? You are like a millennial on the cusp of an X-gen.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But like not my dad's X-gen. Or he's a baby boomer, right?
Your dad's a baby boomer.
Oh,
I was about to say.
60s.
Your dad better not be an X-gen.
No,
he better be a baby boomer.
No, he's 61 was his year.
Definitely
so, yeah.
A baby boomer. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, so again, seeing all these people of our generation and everybody's going back and forth at each other. I mean, people are losing friends. I haven't unfriended any.
I did.
I take that back. I did unfriend a
I
couple.
I did. I unfriended two people.
All
I did.
Right. So what would make a millennial who is so in tune with social media, and you guys live and die by this stuff, and you just Snapchatted something
as soon
a second
as I
ago.
Walked in.
And what would make a millennial unfriend somebody on Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat or whatever
well,
you're doing?
Well, I mean, the first thing, if you're mean, but yeah. I'm talking about mean, like you insult somebody's character beyond their opinion. I have defriended because of that.
Yeah.
I have 100%, especially if you sound ignorant and you don't have any facts, because there's like a mean because you have an opinion and you're really passionate. Then there's like a mean where it's like, we're going to talk about your mom, your education, your value system. That I've unfriended because of that. That's too far.
They crossed the line.
Yeah.
The millennial line with you. So are you seeing a lot of millennials going back and forth at each other over this election?
Oh, my goodness. 100%. I mean, my best friend got off Facebook for a whole year. She decided during the 2016 because she was getting so emotional on Facebook. She deleted her account. And now I'm like ramped up. I'm like, let me get on social media and talk about politics because I love it.
Yeah.
Within reason. But I think the number one thing that people are doing is Facebook is such a expressive, you can be anybody you want. Mm-hmm. You can be nobody you want. You can just be an observer. So they genuinely feel like it's a public platform. It's like their version of a soapbox. They're standing on their soapbox, even if there's only their mom listening and liking.
But mom's going to hear what I have to say.
Yeah, and so it's like it's their soapbox.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're doing it. And plus millennials, we're a little, I'm not going to say me, we're a little about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. A little?
A little about ourselves. So we feel like our opinion is the best and you can't change it. So what are you doing? So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and there was a thing out on a video out on the internet about how corporations need to relate to millennials because
I saw a version of that. Yeah.
It was like, I have to feel like I matter. I have to feel like my opinion is valuable.
We have to feel like we're changing the world with you.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
I did see that. Yeah.
Is that the way you feel and your friends feel?
When I read a very similar version of that article, I could relate to about 85% of it because I do want to feel like I want to change the world. I do want to feel like my opinion matters. I do want to feel like I'm a part of something bigger than myself.
Right.
But what I didn't relate to it is the entitlement part of the article where it's like, you better relate to me. I'm like, no, this is a give or take in the business world. Same with relationships. So I didn't get that. I didn't really understand that part, but 100%. All of my friends want to change the world, even if they're working at Chick-fil-A. They want to change the world.
But how do millennials think they're going to be able to do that?
You know, I always thought it would be with the most creative idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think I'm going to change the world, I hope.
Right.
Or maybe with hugs and glitter and sparkles and good attitudes. But I want to say that's where there's a disconnect. Because you can't change the world by working at a coffee shop for 3 hours a week. You can't. That is dumb. Like, that is dumb. And I love my generation, but that's dumb. If you're going to sit at a coffee shop and complain about how everything's bad, but you're actually not going to go work on it, even if that means, like, just helping your neighbor or if that means doing something that's not about yourself, then you're not changing the world. It's unrealistic. So the way we're going to do it is we're going to have to die to ourselves. And we're going to have to see the bigger picture, even if we're a toenail in the bigger picture. We got to do it. You might not be the smile or the eyes.
Are you a toenail? Are you a toenail in the bigger picture, Sparkle? Is that what we're looking at?
I would say I'm the mouth in the bigger picture. if the bigger picture was a body. That's what I'm saying. But every single millennial wants to be the head. They want to be the mouth. They want to be the eyes. But sometimes it takes every little part for the bigger picture. But millennials don't want to do that.
Are millennials good at working within a group to accomplish a goal?
Yes.
Question mark.
If everybody gets credit, then they're okay.
Then they're good with that.
Yeah. That's what goes back to dying to yourself. Yeah. Are you willing to die to what you believe in for maybe the bigger cause of what you believe in? Or is it like, no, basically every millennial is like, what I believe is the most important thing, and you're never going to change me, so why are you even trying?
Right.
And I'm defending you because of it.
So millennials, I mean, we have seen great generations before. I mean, we saw the generations that stormed the beaches at Normandy. We saw generations that lived through the Great Depression. We saw the generation that basically gave this country the liberty that we have today.
To be on Facebook.
And to be on Facebook.
I agree.
And all of that. And does this generation have that capacity
to
do great things?
We do, but, and I hate to say this, but it goes back to, okay, so we're told at 5 years old we can do anything we want.
Right.
We are told that. I remember telling my dad that I wanted to be an artist and I could barely draw.
Right.
I feel like I'm better now. But I told him I wanted to be a tap dancer. I told my dad at sixth grade I was going to be a stand-up comedian, straight up.
Right.
Okay. And my parents are very like, okay, you can do whatever you want. Now, my dad is a little bit more realistic. So he kept being like, are you sure you don't want to be a nurse or something like that?
Yeah.
But I have friends that live with parents that are like, you can do whatever you want. The thing is you can't do whatever you want. You are literally bad at stuff. You are bad at stuff. So we have millennials that think they can do whatever they want when you can't. You can't YouTube how to be an Irish dancer. You cannot YouTube that. And I have a friend who wants to be an aerialist. Yeah. She YouTubed it, and now she does it.
Now these are the people that have the silk scarves hanging.
She has no training. She's never been a gymnast her entire life. She YouTubed it for 6 months, and now she's trying to make it as an aerialist.
Professional.
I'm not. She lives in Colorado, and I want to be like, no, that's so dangerous. You could literally die. But it's a whole bunch of participation trophies. Oh, you're so good.
That's right. And that's the difference between your generation and mine. Like, my grandfather, I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandfather was like, no, you can't do that. No.
I mean, I have been told.
You'll shoot your eye out. You'll kill yourself. You'll burn the house down. Something bad will happen if you attempt this.
Exactly. But parents, they feel like, okay, the world is at your fingertips. It is, relatively. Yeah. That is. But you can't, if you're bad at singing and you're living and dying, like, I'm going to be a singer. No, you're not. Like, go find what you're good at.
Yeah, exactly. Find out what your talents are. So how do you think millennials are, I mean, how are they poised to change the world? What are they more involved now politically than you think they were 4 years ago? Because you were, I mean, you've been able to vote for, 11 years now?
Yeah, I will say that right out of high school, I felt like I was more political than any of my friends. But I wanted to be a poli-sci major for a little bit.
Yeah.
Then I became a theater major, so it's almost the same thing.
Just about. You're exactly right.
But I would say what we're so good at is we're really good at being creative and thinking out of the box. That is something that we're so good at. But we're also so good at taking a problem and making it, stretching it, manipulating it, making this total solution that nobody can think of. And one thing I will say about the previous generation, maybe yours or my dad's, is that they have a hard time seeing that. And so sometimes I'm like I'll tell my dad, hey, Dad, let's do something like this. And he'll be like, well, that's not how it's done.
Right.
And I'm like, I know, but I'm telling you that this is better. But it's almost like that you can't see out of your box to see our new, like, wiggly box. So, and that's what's the difference, is we have the capacity, the creativity, the drive, the passion. But sometimes we need the opportunities, and we need you to take off your bifocals.
What? No, well, but you also got to understand that you can learn things from people who have tried it before.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there can be a good melding of the generations there with us folks that say, you know what, you really can't do that, but I haven't tried it.
Okay.
But I haven't tried it.
Yeah.
And go ahead and try it.
Well, there's a lot to say.
It'd be like my grandfather telling me, you're going to burn the house down.
There's a lot to say with, I think maybe that's where the next generation comes in and are more like mentors.
Yeah.
Maybe like mentorship and maybe guiding, helping. But at the same time, I see some creative partners happening with the next generation, this generation.
Right.
It's almost like we both have to get over ourselves. And I have to tell you this is what my mom said last night. She thinks that my grandpa's super entitled, 100%.
Yeah.
Because he's super old now, like really old.
Yeah.
He has to rely on a lot of things, but he gets so stuck in his ways and so entitled about the way things are that he'll literally like leave the room if it's not how he wants. And my mom's like, you're the same as a freaking millennial. And they were arguing about it because he just moved to South Carolina. Yeah. And she was like, they have an entitlement problem. Like literally. Now, is that above baby boomer? Because he's like 100. He's like 80.
Yeah, that's above baby boomer. Yeah. All right. Sparkle, we appreciate you being on the program. Thank you for that millennial perspective.
Thank you.
Sparkle from our sister station, 95SX. It's 13 minutes until 10 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA.
Charlie's taking your calls right now at 843-556-1250. You're listening to the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
What would you, you got to admit, there's nothing, there are very few things that beat a really good grilled cheese sandwich. I mean, I love my grilled cheese sandwich. Do I like them enough to get into a standoff over them? No. I wouldn't. 55-year-old guy named David Blackwell from Dundalk, Maryland, got into a huge argument with his wife and daughter Sunday night after he made himself a grilled cheese sandwich and one of them took a bite. Officer Sean Vinson talks about the standoff.
Right now, we don't know if there's any mental issues or if there was alcohol or drugs involved. We're going to continue to look around the house, clear the house to see what we can find. And the man will be taken to a local hospital for an evaluation to see why this enraged him so much about his grilled cheese sandwich.
It was a grilled cheese. He got so upset that he grabbed a gun and fired a shot in the house. It wasn't at his wife or his daughter, but they got the heck out of there and called the cops. Daniel was still so furious that he barricaded himself inside for a 3-hour standoff, and with the standoff with the cops before he finally surrendered. He's been charged with attempted first and second degree murder. That'll be dropped. First and second degree assault. That'll be dropped. And reckless endangerment. That one might stick. So, I've had good grilled cheese sandwiches before, but nothing to get into a fight like that over with. Oh my gosh, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. All right, let's see. All right, this guy went from weirdly devoted son to terrible, terrible son in a heartbeat. 21-year-old guy named Thomas Pynchon from St. Petersburg, Florida. He was arrested on Saturday after he shoved his 47-year-old mother, Carmen, and she fell and hit a kitchen chair. Now, when he was being processed into jail, they were cataloging all of his tattoos. They noticed he had one on his chest. It was his mom's name. Yeah, the report said his chest tattoo is, quote, Carmen Pynchon with a rose. That's sweet. Sweet enough that she'll forgive him for assaulting her? Not sure about that. He's been charged with domestic battery. I'm going to get a big old, I ain't getting a tattoo of nothing for nobody. I'll tell you that right now. All right, and this is one of the things, I played this for you a little bit earlier this morning, but this is what I got to listen to this weekend. You ready? Yeah, that's it. Yeah, right. All right, so you're saying, Charlie, what in the world is that? It's a video. You can check it out on my Facebook page. It is a video of a horse playing with a rubber chicken. I don't know if you guys have seen that. It's gone viral. But apparently the owners, they can't keep the thing away from him. He absolutely loves it, as does my wife. She loves the video. So I was sitting there doing something this weekend, and this is what I heard coming from her on the couch. Yeah, I'm like, what are you listening to? And she's just a giggling away about that horse. It is a very funny video. I mean, the horse really seems to like it. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. A 71-year-old man was airlifted to a Florida hospital after suffering respiratory problems aboard the Carnival Ecstasy yesterday. Of course, the Charleston-based cruise ship was off the west coast of Florida outside of Port Canaveral when the Coast Guard was called about 8 o'clock in the morning. Crews on the MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter flew the woman to Holmes Regional Medical Center in Melbourne within the hour. Luckily, they were that far or that close to land. They were able to get her to emergency medical help fairly quickly. I hear that the carnival is actually going to be taking a little bit of a break from the port. I think it's going to be getting a makeover. Somebody, I'm going to have to double check on that. But last I saw, the carnival was going to be gone for about 6 weeks. So we'll give you more on that coming up. What else we got going on out there? Of course, the Dylann Roof penalty phase going on right now. It started a few minutes ago, and they are expecting the opening and closing statements today, including the closing statement from Dylann Roof, who has been representing himself. That's going to happen today. And then there's going to be, the judge is going to charge the jury and give them their responsibilities in coming to a verdict in this case. And they could be deliberating later on today. We could have a verdict sometime today. We'll keep you updated at WTMA on Facebook and on Twitter, and of course at WTMA.com, and let you know as soon as a verdict comes down or we know anything about this. Right now we've got Jay Richardson. He is speaking for the defense. Dylann Roof apparently is just writing on some paper and staring down at the table right now. I think maybe he could be very well aware that the handwriting is on the wall for him as the punishment is going to be handed down for these horrendous crimes that he committed here in Charleston. So as soon as we know something, we will certainly let you guys know something, and we'll be talking about it coming up tomorrow morning. Y'all have a great day. We'll see you then. Bye, y'all.
Charlie James in the morning. Stimulating talk all day. WTMA.